begin with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we come to you today. Thank you for this opportunity we have here to come together and discuss things about school. I pray that you would bless this class, be with each person here. Thank you for each of them, and pray that you would be with me as I lead the discussion, help it to go smoothly, and help everyone to be able to come away with something that it was worthwhile and they can put to practice. Pray for the other classes going on. I pray that you'd be with them as well. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right. Okay, I have never had a workshop before, so I did not know exactly how many notes I was needed to get for a workshop. So I put together a list of things. But I think I'm going to start off by saying that if you make me do all the talking, you'll be getting out really early. So if I'm a horrible teacher, I guess you can do that, and you'll get out early. It's kind of long and short of it. So I want discussion. So I'm going to be asking questions. I gave you a list of, on the one paper, there was a list of some questions we're going to be looking at. And the reason I gave them to you ahead of time was hopefully you were thinking about them. Okay, because we're going to go around, and I'm going to ask various people that I know, and maybe some of you that I don't know, to answer these questions, these two questions I have up here on the board. So I'm going to start with my brother, Conrad. Conrad, what's your favorite subject to teach?
Probably math.
Why?
Because it's consistent. Dependable and consistent. And there's not a lot of exceptions to rules in math.
Okay. All right. Let's go with Susan. What's your favorite subject to teach?
Math, because it has absolutes and rules.
Absolutes and rules, okay. So consistent, dependable, same idea. Absolutes. Paul Bear, what's yours?
Algebra.
Okay. Why?
It's a challenge to figure it out.
Okay.
Based on the fact that it is dependable, you always can.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Ryan.
Algebra. Math algebra.
Why?
Because I can actually understand it.
Okay. And I don't know near as many of the ladies over here, so I'm going to have to look at your name tags. Why don't we go with Carol? What's your favorite subject to teach?
Yeah.
Math, because? Okay, the rules are there. Okay, you know, I'm kind of surprised that nobody's has so far has hit the answer that I wanted you to hit with why you teach. There's the subjects. Maybe we'll keep going a little bit and see if somebody gets it. John.
Math or history.
Okay, so we've heard a lot about math, but why is history your favorite subject to teach?
I enjoy it.
Okay.
You
will have to excuse my handwriting on the board here. My mom used to say I would make a great doctor, because I was the only one that could read my handwriting in school. And that's a horrible thing for a teacher to say, right? Okay, good. That's closer to what I was going at. Joshua, why don't you say? Okay, that's okay. Those are all very, very good. Now, I guess there's another question that goes along with it, and this is good. Anybody can answer this next question here. So, your favorite subject to teach. Generally, what do you do with your favorite? Like, if a certain subject is your favorite subject to teach, what do you generally do when you teach that subject? You're enthusiastic about it. Good. That was what I was kind of was driving at here in the whole thing about the why it's your favorite subject to teach. Because recess isn't really a subject, or we don't think of it as a subject, although you may have asked your students at times, what's your favorite subject? Recess. Okay. So maybe they think of that sometimes. But another question, what in your mind, and I want to hear some discussion on this, what in your mind is recess supposed to be? When you hear the word recess, what do you think of? I've got a list of things here of questions of what you know, I've heard people think of recess as, or I've thought of recess as, but I'm kind of curious to hear what you say. When you think of recess, what was that?
Teach them to work together.
Good. So it's a time to work together or play together?
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's a time to work together, play together. Okay. Anything else?
Blow energy.
Blow energy? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good.
Learn how to play new games.
Learn how to play new games. A list of questions that come to my mind when I think of recess. Is recess a time to catch your breath and relax? Is recess a time to catch your breath and get your feet back underneath you for the next class? Maybe that first class was so stressful, and you're like, ah, recess. Just kids, go outside, play. I'm going to relax and get ready for my next class. Okay. Or is it just a time where, yeah, you heard that the teacher's supposed to be out there with his or her students, so you go out there, and you just sit and watch and just kind of let things happen as they happen? Or do you go out and do you play with your students? Do you teach your students? Or maybe, and this was probably the most dangerous one for me personally when I was teaching, but a recess is a time where sometimes you feel like, I get a little bit of time off during the school day. And so I would feel those questions there, on your handout sheet that I gave you, or the handout, what are some attitudes about recess that we as teachers shouldn't have? I believe that those are some of the dangerous ones when you start thinking, it's a time to catch my breath and get my feet back underneath me. It's a time to relax and just let the students play, and I'll watch and solve any major issues that come up. I'll take care of that, but I'm just going to let things happen as they happen otherwise. And I would say the worst is when you decide to take a little time off from your teaching day during recess. Because I believe that it's incredibly invaluable for a teacher to do two things with recess. First of all, play with your students. That's incredibly valuable. And secondly, remember that recess is a part of school, and you got to teach. That's what you're paid to do, and so you got to do that during recess as well. So any other ideas, or any other, I guess if I was to ask the question, what are some, any other attitudes that we shouldn't have about recess that were not already mentioned that you think of? Maybe it's a personal experience you had.
Well, I suppose if you're like me, it can be dangerous that you enjoy recess too much, and it's kind of hard to go back inside when the bell rings or things like that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I used to think I was the only teacher with that problem.
And I thought what you were saying, is recess time to relax and get ready for the next class? Because I nodded quite vigorously, and the girl over there shook her head. I don't think those things are necessarily mutually exclusive, right? You can go out and... I used to go out and unbend about as much as the students did, I think, and that can really help kind of refocus things.
Right. I guess I should have clarified that. So that question came from a personal experience I had the first year I was teaching. I was teaching world geography, and my students told me at the beginning of the year that they did not like geography. And they pretty much dared me that it was impossible for me to make geography interesting. Okay, which is, I took that dare very energetically. And I set out to make geography interesting, but I found out that geography was right after first recess. And so I found out that I would sometimes stay in to work on making my geography lesson interesting while they went out and played. So that's kind of what I was driving at when I said preparing for your next class that way. Yeah, it's a great way to run off energy. And the second year I taught back in Pennsylvania, I the first recess I always went out with my students. And it was a great way to work off some energy and get ready for the next class. But I was referring to staying in to work, preparing for your next class that way.
think she got that.
Is that what you, is that how you took it? Okay. Good. Now we're all on the same page. Okay. Anything else? And this whole thing of dangers, I guess, of recess, or what recess, how we as teachers shouldn't be relating to recess. My students that I have had will tell you that I have a habit of having a pen or something in my hand and twirling it around and dropping it a dozen times in a class. It's a nervous way to All right. Okay, so this next statement I'm going to make is probably the most, if you don't remember anything else from this class, besides me dropping my, I'm going to put it there so I'm not tempted to drop it. Why can't we have those attitudes about recess? Why is recess important? I would say this is probably the main thing I want you to get about recess. Recess is just like any other school subject. You as the teacher need to be excited about recess or your students won't be either. Oh, it's so important, I'm going to say it again. You as the teacher need to be excited about recess or your students won't be either. And you can take out that recess blank and fill it in with any other school subject, and it fits as well. So maybe recess is a subject, a school subject. Maybe we need to approach it with that attitude that recess is a school subject, and we need to do the same thing we're going to do with recess as we do with other subjects. So at the beginning of a school year, what should you do, unless you're a horrible procrastinator like me, what should you do with the subjects you're going to be teaching next year?
Study them.
Good. What else?
Prepare for them
by
studying.
Okay. Well, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Reading. Plan. I was thinking of plan when you said plan. Get excited about them. Plan. Prepare. Study. And most of the time, when you are preparing to teach a certain subject in school, you set a goal of some sort. You say, I want to do this in math, I want to do this in science, you know, fill in the blank. You know, for, you know, that going back to the geography class I was teaching, my goal was I wanted the students to like geography. And by the end of the year, they did. Trust me, they did. But I think I sacrificed some other things in getting to that goal. So what are some goals that you or that I should have for recess this year? I think that's a question that you should think about. And if you notice on that list of questions I asked you, I'm not going to ask this question and have any of you answer it, but I think it's a worthy question to think of. Have you put any time into thinking about what you're planning to do for recess this year? And maybe you'll look at me and say, well, have you? To be honest, no, I haven't. Because I might still be in this big old boot by the time school starts, and that's going to hinder my recess ability, obviously. If you'd see me try to run in this thing, you'd probably laugh. But Lord, I hope, Lord willing, that I won't be in that thing by recess, and once I know that for sure, well, then I'll start thinking about recess more. But you should set some goals for recess. And I would venture to say, if you ask the question, why is it important to set goals, if you don't have any goals, if you don't have high goals for your recess, they're not going to be profitable. That was something that I ran into last year. Last year when I was teaching, I was way too much of the attitude of, I'll go out there and watch, but just let things happen as they happen. You know, and most of my students from last year would probably tell you that the recesses were not very fun. Sometimes they were, but those were the ones where I got involved and actually played with them and so on. They would probably tell you that. They'd probably give you more details, too, if you wanted that, too, but I think I'll stop on those details. So have those goals for yourself. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, well, I don't know what goals to set. Well, why don't the rest of you tell me some goals that we should set for the recesses this year? Because they're probably fairly universal among schools. Now, it's going to change a little bit depending on whether you're teaching upper grades or lower grades or middle grades, and I think that's the reason why Aaron's over there having the exact same thing for younger grades. It's that exact same workshop. So the goals you give, it can be for a certain age level, or it can be for any age level. Because there are a couple goals, I would say, that regardless of age of the students you're teaching, would fit. So give me some goals that you think we should have in our recesses this year. Don't make me give you the goals. I've got several of them, but... Okay, teaching by example. So, okay, so I guess you could say your goal, so you're saying your goal would be to teach.
Yeah.
But what? Teach what? Because probably the what are the goals you should have.
Yeah.
How to be a good sport.
How to be a good sport. I heard somebody say one time that anyone, you don't have to be taught this, anyone can be a good winner. But it's really hard to be a good loser. Or it takes a lot of character to be a good loser. Okay, so good. You want to teach good sportsmanship. What else?
Putting others first.
Putting others first. That's incredibly important. You want children to be able to play well and interact well with others. That's incredibly important. And just for an illustration, thinking about that, and this, you have to be careful as a teacher. At least if you're like I am, I'm very competitive. My students pick up on that pretty quick, and it's very easy for me. This goes back to teaching by example. It's very easy for me when we're playing. Let's say we're playing Prisoner's Base. Oh, that's a fun game. That's a great game, especially for huge groups of children and teachers. Anyways. So we're playing, and someone's chasing me. You know how it is. They love to catch the teacher. I mean, that's like the ultimate goal. So we're playing, and I've got somebody on my tail who's about as fast as me, maybe a little faster, and I'm doing my best to escape them, and I escape them, according to me. But then my student says, "I hit your shirt." What do you do? Because, and the inside of me, the tendency is to say, well, I didn't feel it. Okay? And so I say that, and I go back to the base I was originally on. He goes back to the original base he was on. And then 5 minutes later, a 5- and a 6-year-old are chasing each other. And the one evades the other one, and the other one says, "I hit your shirt." What did the teacher just do? Huh?
I didn't feel it.
And you know, that's just a classic example of an example. Wow, that was impressive. A classic example of an example of just the simple fact that the students watch you very closely, and they're going to emulate, or if you don't know what that big word means, they're going to follow your example. And so if you as a teacher let your competitive nature get a little bit out of hand, and you start, you know, making the things with, "Well, I didn't feel it," or something like that, the students will follow suit, and it's a lot harder for a teacher to swallow his or her pride and say, "Okay, I didn't feel it, but I'll come on your base," than it is to start trying to fix this problem once it's been going on for period of time. Okay, so learning how to relate with others. What other goals should we have?
Teamwork. That teamwork is not only fun, but it also actually gets the job done quicker and easier.
Teamwork. Mm-hmm. Very good. I like that one. That was one I hadn't wrote down. I like that. Teamwork. Yeah, that's very, very important. And that goes along with working well with others. But you know, eventually, they're going to be old enough. They're going to, Lord willing, grow up, or hopefully grow up, and reach a point where they have to learn to work with other people who are adults. And you know, there is a little difference between how children relate versus how adults relate. Okay, working together as a team. Anything else?
Being consistent, I think, in making sure that they know what's expected at recess. Maybe, oh, you have certain recesses designated so that this recess we're all playing, someone's going to pick a game and everybody plays. And so they know that maybe they need to be out there 3 minutes after the bell rings for sure, and we're going to start playing this game.
Consistency, yeah, consistency bleeds over into every aspect of teaching anything. And it's probably, for me personally, one of the hardest things, parts of a teacher to do is to be consistent. But yes, be consistent. And, you know, sometimes the part of being consistent is, well, I think what I'm hearing you're saying is make sure the students know what you expect. Is that right? Make sure the students know what you expect. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you send the students outside to play and you don't really give them, you tell them, well, just go outside and start something, or start playing a game. They go out. You come out 5 minutes later and they're all lounging around not doing anything. Well, why didn't you start a game? Well, you didn't tell us what game to start. You know, I mean, make sure the students understand what you expect. Along with that, one of my pet peeves is students who don't participate 100% in the game. That's one of my pet peeves. And unfortunately, back in Pennsylvania, I had a whole classroom of girls who did not like participating in anything recess-oriented. And it's a little bit harder to know how to deal with a young lady than it is a young man who kind of has the same problem, which generally doesn't really happen. The boys like to get out and run around and all that. But I did try very much to make it clear to them what I expected. And you try to hold them accountable to what you expect. Now, back at that school, they didn't do this in the younger grades, but in the high school, the teacher would give every student a grade for their recess throughout the year. They would give them an E plus. I think it was an E plus. I shouldn't say the letter, so I don't know exactly what it was. But I think there was four different you could give. And it was the plus, the satisfactory, a little bit, you'd like, and then the third one was you'd like to see a little bit more, and I think the fourth was just plain awful. But that was part of their report card. Isn't it amazing what happens when you put the emphasis on the wrong syllable? Okay. Any other goals that you can think of before we move on?
Teach them how to play.
And generally that's by example. Like going back to the thing that you should have written down here in this blank. If the teacher's not excited about it, the students probably won't be either.
Another one would be having the closely related to what Norman said, but games have rules, knowing what the rules are and then administering the rules and playing by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I think of that sometimes when our world is full of that. How many times do we fill out these big charts or big whatever, full files on the computer, and then you click on submit. You know, there's a double meaning there, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so it's a life skill to be able to, and then how many times have we clicked on submit? It gets kicked back out because it didn't fill out all the fields correctly. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a life skill in understanding what's expected in this game. What makes a game, what's set of rules? That's what makes kickball different than soccer, and so on. So understanding the rules, clearly defined the rules, and carefully administrating the rules.
Right, and that is something, that's a very good point. Because there are certain games, I mentioned Prisoner's Base. I've taught in two schools, and I'm getting ready to go in a third, and every school that I've taught at so far has had different rules on how to play that game. So you might want to make sure you and the students are on the same page about that. Or else there's going to be some confusion. And generally, we as teachers don't want confusion out there on the playground. It doesn't really bode that well.
One other goal that is a good one is creativity. Sometimes that's hard to work into just changing rules in the game, or maybe you have a game with boundaries, and so you change the boundaries and put them in a different shape. Just alter one thing and see what happens. You know, we used to play a game called Chinese Wall. I don't know what other people call it, but it's where, you know, when you're caught, you stand there and you end up big, and then they can catch other people as they're standing there.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we did one time was made the boundaries in an L shape. So you had to run and make a corner and then run the other way. Well, who knows what's going to happen, but it changes your strategy completely, whether you're the runner or the in person, because there gets to be a big bottleneck at the corner. And so you really learn things. Or we would put obstacles out in the middle of the field, and you have to run around in my car or whatever stuff we had. That makes, you know, you think, makes the students think. And if they don't think, they're caught. And so next time they start thinking a little more. So that, it promotes creativity and teamwork and lots of other things too, but it's spinning the wheels that otherwise might be neutral.
Right, and you know, I was gonna get into creativity a little bit later, but I think now is a good time to move into the next question that I have. Is so we have the goals. Okay, you should have a couple goals written down there. If you don't, write them down. Actually, you don't have to. It's up to you. But we have the goals in our mind now. Now, how do we get to those goals? Because just telling your students at the beginning of the year, you know, I have this goal that we are going to play nicely all year, and there's never going to be a mix-up or a misunderstanding between you or me or any of your classmates, okay? So this goal is here, and you tell your students that, is that going to reach the goal? Well, I mean, that's a pretty obvious question that it's not. So how do we make sure our goals happen? And I think this is where the practical side of it comes into play, and Paul already mentioned a practical thing. Change the shape of the game. Keep the same rules, but change the shape of the game. You know, I know back in Pennsylvania, we had a game that was, it was fun. We played, it was called six ball. What it was, you had a line in the middle. You had two teams. Each team had three balls back, probably 30 feet behind that line. And the goal of the game was to get the three balls from the opposing, well, actually all the balls on your line. And the way you did that was by running into enemy territory. And in enemy territory, you could get shot, or caught in this case. And grabbing that ball and making it back to that line safely, and then the ball was on your side. If you got caught, you had to stop, drop, and roll. I mean, it was stop and just stay there until one of your teammates come and freed you. Came and freed you, excuse me. Well, I remember one time we were going to play this. We wanted to play this with the whole school, 86 students. That's a big team. That's the huge two teams. So our principal decided to make it into 12 ball, four teams, plus sign. You had to watch three sides. It really, really changed the dynamic of the game significantly. Okay, so that's good. Change the setup of the game, change the rules a little bit, maybe something like that, or maybe even just come up with a completely new game right off the top of your head. But you have to be careful with that because sometimes it's difficult. But it can be done. What about, okay, so any other ways, some practical ways that we can reach our goals for this, for our recesses for the school year?
Probably one thing is establish an order with which you can direct them at some point. Like for me, we had our students first recess and within 3 minutes be all lined up out in the soccer field line. And that gave me an opportunity to give directions for the game. That was about it. Because otherwise,
good.
You explain it 20 different times to the students that didn't get it.
Right. I think that's a good one. Make, you know, the students understand that, you know, when you go outside, you need to be here by a certain time so that we can get the game started, or if you want, or just if you have a new game you're doing, you're going to change the rule that everybody can hear. You don't have to repeat it 20 times. It's a time saver, really, but it does teach the students. It does definitely teach the students, and it teaches them responsibility in a way. I remember, I think Ryan could probably say more about this than I can, but my Uncle Joel, who taught here at Halsey for years, had a rule that if the students, when he sent them out for recess, if they were not started in 2 minutes and he came out and they were standing around, they turned right around and went back into the classroom, no recess. You know, that's teaching responsibility. Teaching, for the young men, teaching leadership. Because I love to see the young guys take responsibility to get a game started. Now, occasionally as the teacher, you have to push them and prod them or set up a little bit of a punishment if they don't. But I like to see that happen. Okay, anything else?
So is that okay to assign a student to be in charge of recess? I try that sometimes in models.
What do you mean by in charge of recess?
Get the game started, settle the squabbles, answer the questions.
Get the game started, yes.
Yeah.
Settle the squabbles.
Well, not serious.
I would say no.
I
would go back to the thing of teaching responsibility to the students. That's good. But the students need to understand that they are still answerable to you. And if you're out there watching, if they run into a problem, you can step in, help them. If you're inside the classroom working on a lesson and they run into a problem, it doesn't work very well.
I think in relation to your question, how are we going to achieve these goals, it's going to probably be better realized if we're active participants.
Right.
We're active in recess rather than passive. And the question there from Ms. Susan sounds a little passive. It sounds you know, running a little bit risky. Although there may be opportunity that may just be exactly what needs to be done. But I think as a general practice,
right. I would say it's as far as I would have a hard time, especially with the way my recesses went last year, I would have a hard time telling my students, go out and play a game. But I would tell them easier, okay, we're going to play softball. You go out and get the team started and start playing softball. I'll be out in a couple minutes to make sure you got things going. If they know what you expect them to be doing when you come out, they pick the game, or you pick the game and say, now go start that, that's a little bit different than just sending them out there and say, go play something. Because then there is an expectation there on your part, and they know that.
So I have a question.
Yes.
This is going to be my first year of teaching, but last year I know they had a whole problem. So the students, when they came to play a game, so they're playing, I don't know, called tree base or king's base or something, they just sit on the base and don't get caught. You know, like, well, that's not the aim of the game, it's not get caught. The aim of the game is, well, to win. Whatever, have fun. Or you say they go chase each other on the vehicles all day long, so finally they decided, or, you know, finish drawing, people just chase it. Finally they just said, hey, you can't go chase each other on the vehicles. Well, so you're making a real big problem. And I guess there's a place for that, but how do you train by example as far as the game is meant to run around, have fun, and it's also to win, but if you get caught, you got caught. And I don't like getting caught either, but hey, get caught, it happens. You have to do that to get the game, make the game fun.
Right. That's a really good question.
That was a big model they had last year.
That's a really good question, and I don't know if I have an answer to that. Because that's probably a question that you could get an answer for that, and I might have to ask somebody who's older and wiser than I am to give an answer to that. But the circumstances are going to be different. The students are different. The personalities are different. And it's going to vary somewhat. But you know, it might almost be a situation where I don't remember. Actually, let's go back to Pennsylvania again for, I don't know if this will help answer the question at all or not. But so we played at lunch recess. My room, 7th and 8th grade, would always play with 5th and 6th grade. And me and the other teacher took turns choosing the game for lunch recess. And one game we played a lot, and the students did get tired of it, but I didn't because the game's always different. It was Prisoner's Base. Or actually, it was King's Base minus the Kings, which I'm not sure what you call that then. But anyways, and one thing I found out is when the students got tired of it, they would just sit on the base and not run around. But there was one thing that would make them start running around, and that's when the teacher started circling their base. They would come out in full force then, and it was even better if you could actually get around it. Because then suddenly they realized that they're sitting on the base and letting you get that head start was the reason that you got one circle on their base. But I don't know if that answers your question or not, but it's going to take you being willing to get caught, to get the game to get the game alive, to get the game going, to get students running off their base. Or, I mean, another, you could make a rule. I know one game, I don't know exactly what you call it, but I've heard it called 21 Skidoo, something like that. I've played it before where the rule is, if people aren't running across, the person who's it can go back in the center of the field and start counting to 10. And when he counts, when he hits 10, everybody has to be off base. Everybody. You can't, if he counts to 10 and you're still on base, he can come on to base and catch you. You were going to say something, Jonathan?
Some of these things can get really thorny because students typically, you can say the rule, everybody has to run, you know, if that's what the problem is. Well, then they'll do these little spurts and break this rule off center. You're not quite sure how to deal with, you know, that particular infraction. Students rarely, you know, make nice, clean infractions of rule when it comes to these problems that are somewhat nebulous. If after appropriate appeal, you still got these problems, I found it effective to take out, we're talking about upper grade recesses here, so taking out three little kiddie chairs, I mean the wee little ones that sink you down about, you know, 8-10 inches off the ground and line them up to the edge of the playground, and tell students, so you know what it takes to carry this game forward, and your fellow students know what it takes to carry this game forward. If you aren't doing it, you're going to those chairs because you're acting like somebody that's not nearly their age. And so you're just going to park there until I think that you can understand how to participate when you get off the chair. And that usually works to get people doing what they want to do.
I could see that. Definitely see how that would work.
So that's very negative reinforcement, right? Is there positive reinforcement?
Well, I guess
maybe that's after positive reinforcement.
The Bible says, or ought to say, where did the wise and sufficient? I mean, we gave them their opportunity.
Right.
If they didn't respond properly to the opportunity, well, that's the unfortunate thing about discipline. You have to choose the consequence. Oftentimes, it's just a little bit more nasty. And you don't have to scream at them. They can choose whether or not they're going to go on the chair.
Another answer to that question, and I would almost, and this can be hard to do, but I would, in answer to your question about is there a positive way to do it, I think there is. And I would say peer pressure. And what I mean by peer pressure is, and this was one practical idea of how I feel like you can help reach your goals, is just a simple fact of plan your recesses in a way that they overlap with another room. So that you have older children playing with younger children. You have these little children looking up to these older ones. And I remember this last year I taught, this point was hit home to me so hard one time. Unfortunately, there was not really anything I could do about it because the student who was participating in this didn't respect me. He wouldn't listen to me when I told him to do something. And so there wasn't really a whole lot I could do, but one of my students, ninth grade boy, didn't like the game we were playing. So he just flopped down on the base, just laid there. Never ran the whole game. Well, 2 minutes after the game started, one of my brother's students, who taught 4th through 6, who also didn't like the game, was right down there beside him. And I doubt he realized the example he was having. Now, actually, he did find it out later because my brother Derek made sure that, well, it's a long story, but they wanted to play ball with Mr. Derek's room. And after that incident, Mr. Derek told me, he said, if they ever ask you to play ball with my room again, you send them to me and I want to talk to them. And basically the way he told him was, I don't want my students playing with influences like that. So there's the peer pressure of helping the students, and I would say that's another goal you should have, especially if you teach upper grades. Make sure that the older students know how much of an influence they have on the younger students. They have a lot. And playing together can really, really help that. And I would even go so far as to say that have a set time, you know, every day, every week, every month, where the entire school plays together, depending on the size of your school. Because you know what? It's in my mind, one of my favorite things about school is watching, well, this was a little bit humiliating for me, But watching the look on a second grader's face when he caught me off guard and caught me in a game. Oh, he was so proud of himself. You know, they live for those moments of playing with the older students. And I think that's incredibly important with redeeming recesses, is get not just with you redeeming recesses with your students, but with the younger and with the students learning how to play with different ages. And you know, even that, this was back in Pennsylvania where that happened, and even my 7th and 8th graders thought it was big stuff to play with the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders. I mean, it was big stuff. I mean, you can imagine what it was like for a 1st or 2nd grader. I mean, it was like next to heaven. I mean, it's kind of, that their faces would almost show you that. And when you're playing, this is another idea of how to reach the goal we have in mind. And it's harder to do this with younger students, but since this is focused on older students, I think you can do this. Impress on your students that even when you're playing with your friends, that there's a standard in the Bible that God wants you to live up to. There is a standard. And the standard involves being good sports, being honest, being kind, trying their best at whatever they do, being cheerful. And I think that's all wrapped up, or most of that's wrapped up in a single verse, and that's the verse at the top of your handout that I haven't said anything about. Does anybody know what 1 Corinthians 10:31 says? No. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whether therefore you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. If the students can understand that there's a standard God wants them, he wants them to play with their classmates like they were playing with him. And I remember I used this argument one time with one of my students who had absolutely horrible penmanship. And I told him, I said, just for one time, I want you to do me a favor, okay? Pretend like Jesus is going to be checking your paper and do your penmanship for me. I didn't recognize his handwriting when it came back. It worked one time, didn't work the second time. But anyways, it worked one time. But because the Bible is incredibly practical. And there are definitely things in the Bible, verses, that can help you with making that standard for your students. Now, one last thing. We're almost done here. Maybe some of you are thinking by now, well, boy, this just sounds confusing. Maybe I'm just gonna cut recess really short. Just have these short recesses throughout the school year. That way there's less time for things to go out of hand, there's less time for things to not go the way we want. I would caution that as well. Because I listened a little bit to somebody talk about recess. And what this man was saying, he was a professor, if I remember correctly. And he said that there is a direct relationship between recess time and the creativity of a student. And I think Paul mentioned that earlier about the creativity. Students who have more recess, now you have to be careful, don't take that too far. You don't want to give them too much, but if you squelch their recess, you squelch their creativity. And I'm pretty sure that if I would ask all of you in this room, would you rather check a paper, like if you told students, I want you to write a story, and you knew that this student is just imaginative and creative and this other one's not, which paper would you rather check? We all would rather check the paper of a creative student. And so if getting our recesses profitable and valuable help our students with their creativity, I think that's well worth the effort to think about, back to that question on that paper, to think about what you're going to do this recess. Plan it out. You know, sometimes, for and a time we're supposed to be done, so pardon me, I got one more thing I want to say. The first year I taught back school back in Pennsylvania, first recess was 10 minutes, and I didn't have a plan for that 10 minutes. I didn't have anything planned. I didn't come into that year with anything planned in those 10 minutes. And those became some of the most horriblest, worst 10 minutes of the day. Second year, I came in, I took those 10 minutes, and I set up a plan. Monday, we jump roped for, I forget how many minutes it was, 2 or 3 minutes. Tuesday, we went jogging. Wednesday, we did jumping jacks. Thursday, we jogged. And Friday, we jump roped again. And then after we would do some of those, the boys now would go down the basement and do push-ups and sit-ups, all those manly things they like to do. It went a whole lot better because I was a plan. Now, maybe you can't do that depending on what classroom you're teaching, but the plan, I think, is very, very important. So take some time to think about it and plan, or at least write down some ideas, some plans of how you would like, what you would like to do, what you think you would like to do, and implement them. And redeem your recess. See if you can have profitable recess, because they are important. All right, anything else before we dismiss? All right, thank you for your input. You are dismissed.